Today's show is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, sharing nothing but the best in whole grain nutrition and committed to their mission of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live from the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday from roughly 12 to roughly 12:45 from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joined, as usual, with Nastasia the Hammer Lopez. How you doing?
Good.
Got Dave in the booth.
Also good.
And everybody's favorite punching bag, Peter Kim.
He has a knee brace.
Well, hello.
Or a hand brace.
By the way, Dave, there are a lot of people who come to MOFAD and will say that they listen to Cooking Issues. And they'll come over, and the first thing they'll do is they'll introduce themselves and say, hey, you know, I'm a big fan of Cooking Issues and mean to come to MOFAD. The second thing they say is, you're the punching bag of the show, huh?
And then they punch you?
That's right.
Hey, listen, you're not allowed to actually punch Peter Kim, I don't think. Unless he, like, invites
you. Taking a stand.
He's going to, like, he's going to end up being like Houdini. He's going to have some sort of, like, you know, latent appendicitis, and someone's going to punch him when he's not looking, and it's going to be a nightmare.
Yeah. And clearly he's prone to medical problems, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
He's got a little bit of a gimpy arm today. What do you have here? Too much...
It's extreme emailing.
He's got gout of the hand.
Yeah, that's right.
Peter Kim, by the way, ex-lawyer. You know, I used to have like paralegal's finger from all the hitting copy. You ever used to make your paralegals do that?
Of course.
Did you respect your paralegals at all?
What? Yeah, of course.
You did not. You're a liar.
Oh my God.
Speaking
You're
of no respect.
Oh, chat room says you should offer to take punches for fundraising for MOFAD.
Ooh.
So that's, hey, on the actually, that's on the table
that,
now.
That is good.
Yeah, okay, that. So chat room, this is something you might not know. It does not hurt. So speaking of paralegals, you know how like when you're in a law office, you don't just buy reams of paper. You buy like pallets of paper and they're in those paper boxes, right? They're in those. Yeah. So the papers come like many reams to a box. But anyway, the lid of a copier box is an amazingly satisfying thing to hit somebody over the head with. But it doesn't hurt that much. So we used to think that what we would do is we had this one really, really strong guy in the law firm that we would just go down into Grand Central with a bunch of these boxes and allow people to smash them over my head for like $5. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if someone got out of hand and wanted to swing a punch, then the large gorilla-like person would just, you know, crush them into a small cube. But, you know, maybe you could do that. Doesn't get hurt. That doesn't hurt so much.
Yeah,
sure. I'm down.
But it's impressive sounding. Like when the box like smashes over your head, it sounds like you're doing something.
Yeah, my dad, who had issues with me leaving this legal career to start opening this museum, will certainly be puffing his chest up with pride to learn that this is my latest fundraising scheme.
Are you referencing the old Uncle Jemima Pure Mash Liquor cartoon commercial that Morgan did for Saturday Night Live back in the day?
No, I'm referencing my actual dad.
All right.
Who hates you?
As well he should. I'm sure Nastasia, if he knew he would hate you as well.
I don't
think
so.
Actually, no, he likes Stas.
Has he met Nastasia?
No.
Okay, there you have it. Speaking of which, Nastasia, on the way over here, I was listening to Boston.
Mm.
And Nastasia and I have a long-running thing. We both like Boston, the band. This has nothing to do with the city. But, like, both of us, like...
We made the mistake of wanting to learn more about them.
Right. So I don't know whether we've mentioned this. Dave, have we mentioned this on the show before? Delp?
I can't recall, no.
Well, the lead singer, Delp, who is a normal-heighted person, but just looks short compared... Delp is his last name. What's his first name?
Oh, last name. Okay.
I don't remember.
Delp. Anyway, he recorded his sister-in-law in the bathroom, a la Chuck Berry.
No, I thought it was in the bedroom.
Bedroom, bathroom. Some sort of horrible, like, invasion of privacy. And then...
Oh, without her knowledge?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then somehow his wife found out about it. Anyway, so he took his own life, but in kind of like a terrible way. He like plugged up all of the doors of his room and lit a bunch of hibachis and just like smoked himself to death.
Oh.
Yeah.
So we can't think of it. And Nastassi and I are like, that's not like a, that's a give up your whole life, move away kind of a situation, not a...
Kill yourself.
It's a, and so we can't listen to the music the same way anymore. Because no. It's kind of like just, it's kind of a downer way to start the show. A little bit. So on a more positive note, last night I went to the WD-50 pop-up down there on Front Street. Good. He was doing all of his, because his nice. new book is coming out. In fact, it's out, I think, next week. Check it out. It's, you know, I don't know whether it's all the recipes, but it's like a huge portion of the recipes from WD-50. They're actually from the restaurant. So if you ever, you know, decided that what you really wanted to learn how to do is make Wiley's not foie, which, by the way, is not like cannot like K-N-O-T, foie, as in foie gras tied into a knot. It has, I think, also the dessert recipes, so not just the savory recipes. Check it out. It's, you know, it's one of those things that's like $75 on the retail, but I think Amazon's got it for like $40 or $50. And it comes in its own box. It's one of those books that comes in its own box. What do you think about books that come in their own box, Nastassia?
I see a pizza with greens today.
That is a completely unrelated fact. Yeah. Completely unrelated. Also out now, or coming out right now, this is the season of books. By the way, Nathan Miravol with his bread book was on the at the
books.
Museum. Well, is
it's
it
a six volume?
Oh, nanny, 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 poo. It's like, yeah, it's the same size as like modernist cuisine, but yeah, it's modernist bread, and it's same price too.
Yeah.
500 and change bucks.
And yeah. his employees carry it around in a nuclear resistant case.
Yes, oh yeah, the new case is metal. Why did he say why he did that? Were they having problems with the acrylic cracking or something in the last one? So, and just so
it's
you guys know,
book.
If you wish to know more, which I'm sure you do, I know I do, about modernist bread, you can check out a series of podcasts here on Heritage Radio, hosted by none other than our man Turkel. Is that true, Dave? What is the name of this podcast?
Modernist Breadcrumbs. So episode one is out now on the Heritage Radio Network website. Episode two is coming out next Wednesday, and then every Wednesday thereafter we'll do one episode a week. But this Wednesday we're releasing the talk that Nathan did with Michael at MoFed.
Yeah, so I spoke to him after the talk, and what we're going to do is we're going to wait for the book to be out for a little while, wait for, you know, folks out there in the community to generate their questions, and then we'll have Miravold on the program, and you can ask him all of the questions about the book directly. Make sense? Makes sense.
I hope they have a section on sandwiches in the book.
Oh, yeah.
Why would they have a section on sandwiches? That's an entirely different... Bread. It's a book on bread, not a book on freaking sandwiches. Although I think they have a pizza section, obviously.
Yeah, but bread defines sandwiches. Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, do you have a section on, like, air quality? That defines everything, right? No. Like, you know what I mean? Like, no. Like what's the...
What?
Why, wow. In other words, like, just because you make a sandwich out of the bread doesn't mean you
We're
have
all
a...
shaking our heads and sort of squinting right now.
Yeah, not following that Trumpian logic.
Yeah.
Whoa. Not. This is not the political show. This is not the political show.
Oh, yeah. That's in the works.
Well, kind of in the works. Someone get me some freaking guests. Nastassia, do you know any political people?
For the 10th time, no.
Peter, do you know any political people?
I don't know.
You don't know if you know them?
I don't think about it.
No, think about it. Bad people. Another book coming out. Jim Meehan's new Bartender's Manual book is coming out. I saw an advanced copy, and even though there's a picture of me in it, it is still a very good looking book. It's like a very, very pretty book. Beautiful book. Like,
in spite of you.
In spite of me. Quotes from bar people and bartenders and bar owners, plus, you know, Jim's insight from years in the business, plus recipes. Super pretty book, super awesome. I would check that out. Anyway, so Peter, what do you want the show to push out here?
No, well, we've got a lot of good programming going on at the museum. We had Nathan Miravol last week.
It's too late for that. It's over.
No, okay, we got stuff coming
it's
up.
It's over.
We got,
why are you telling about crap they already missed?
All right, fine.
You're just mean.
The time it's taking for you to interrupt me and harangue me is basically, yeah. I mean, anyway. So we've got a natural wine tasting this evening at the museum.
Tell them what natural wine means.
Well, it's basically relying on natural... What?
Right.
Wait, you think he doesn't know?
No, I think he doesn't know.
Or just that there is no clear definition.
I think it's one of those words that, like, we all kind of know what it means, but it really has no meaning.
Right.
Anyway, so go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, we have a program on Chilean gastronomy with Chef Rodolfo Guzman tomorrow.
What's going on with that? What's
he's got he's one of the top chefs in Chile, and he's going to be talking about this new book he just released. We have some recipes we're doing from that, some cool stuff. we've got a food trivia thing next week and a program on the cuisine of Istanbul.
Oh, then, food trivia? Like, what kind of food trivia?
Can you do a bananagrams night? That's a food.
Well,
you can't have only banana. Yeah, but can't have bananagrams are just about food.
How do you limit it to food?
Yeah. No, because it's a bananagram.
Oh, that's reaching, Stas. Yeah,
no,
Stas, wait for the new bar to open, and you can come have your bananagram tournament.
Yeah, sir.
But hold on. So what's this trivia thing? What is this? Is this like a...
We do a trivia thing once a month now. It's been really successful.
So it's about Istanbul?
Who makes the questions?
No, separate. So our staff does.
So it's not food trivia about Istanbul, which would also be...
No. We have a food trivia thing.
You should use 11 Madison Park's game. They have all the trivia food questions in there.
All of them. Every single one.
Every single one you could ever think of. They paid a lot of money for it. Yeah, cool. I'll give it to you.
Then we have a program on the cuisine of Istanbul. And then,
what about it?
There's a woman named Robin Eckert. She had a book on the diverse cuisines of Turkey. And so, regional cuisines, life in the villages, cities, farms, and high pastures of the lesser-known provinces throughout Turkey.
What's she going to make? Is she going to make some stuff, or is she talking about it?
I don't know if there's going to be food at this one.
I have to say, I wish I could go back to Istanbul. I really, really, really loved the food there. I thought it was really good.
Yeah. And then we have our friend Jeffrey Porter from Batalion Bastianich Hospitality Group doing a Chianti wine tasting.
By the way... anything he does, he's going to bring wacky crap that you can't have anywhere else, or he's going to... That's been my experience with him. He always has interesting stuff coming in, so you want to check out whatever he's doing.
Yeah, so if you go to programs.mofad.org, you can find all that and get tickets.
How much do those tickets cost, roughly?
What's
the range? What's the over and under, Peter?
Like 10 to 30, 35.
So basically, like, less than it should cost. So it's basically a bargain. You should go to these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Peter.
Dave.
All right. So, if you have questions, you can call them in to 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. Next week, we will not be here, Nastasia, because I will be in China. I will be at the Canton Fair trying to research suppliers for the next product that's coming out, post-Spinzol. It'll be...
Moisture management system.
That's my whole life, is moisture management system. That's my whole life. So, Stas, what do you think? Like a year and a half, the next one?
Sure.
You shoot for a year and a half on the next one?
And it'll actually be three.
If it's 3 years, I will not be alive.
Write this down, chat room.
I will not be alive if it's 3 years. Realistically, if it takes 3 years, I will not be alive.
Are you going to go Delp on us?
One can hope.
No, I would never hibachi myself.
You're supposed to be happy by 50, right?
What?
You're supposed to be happy by 50.
That's 4 years-ish. Yeah, so. All right. I'll never be happy, though. That's a lie. Like, you tell yourself it's going
to
get better.
You don't want to deal with some of the crap.
That's true. I want to not be dealing with some of the crap that I have to deal with on a regular basis. Anyway, this is Nick Wong wrote it. Yet, Nastasia and Peter were pointing to themselves when I was saying, I just don't want to have to deal with some of the crap that I currently have to deal with. They're like, he means us? I'm like, not just you guys. Nick wrote in. And a shout out to Nastasia, to myself, to Dave in the booth, and if he's there, also to Peter of Overcooked and Underseasoned.
Oh, yes.
We talked about that on the air, right?
Peter, just say it one more time.
Peter Kim goes to...
Guest.
Peter Kim, guest, not even paying for his own food. Dave, did I mention he wasn't even paying for his own food? It was being paid for?
Oh, now I know.
But listen, if I say yum, then you know I mean yum. If I laugh at a comedy show, you know I find it freaking funny.
Family show.
Freaking.
Yeah. And then, so Peter Kim's this guy, this kid. How do you like our favorite restaurant?
Overcooked and Underseasoned.
The lights dim. Everybody stops eating.
Classic. Classic Kim.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, even
bringing out all the hits today.
You know what the thing is? Nastasia does bring out the worst in Peter, though.
Yeah.
I do.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Like, Peter
There's
is...
this dark energy
no
that flows
reason.
From her.
For no reason.
Well, you know what it is? Because it's like all the small talk and pleasantries that you do with people to be nice. It's like around Nastasia feels ridiculous.
Because she hates that.
She hates it
well,
so much.
Well, I can tell that you're not being you.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's not the case.
Yes.
Anyway. So he writes in, Nick, this is Nick, always had this issue when dealing with dry aged beef. We would get in the 109 ribeye. So 109 ribeye is a specific like cut. So it's a cut you can order that's one of the standard U.S. cuts, the 109. It's the whole kind of ribeye with a certain kind of trim on it. Anyway, we would get in the 109 ribeyes, and after trimming off, dry age them, after trimming off all the desiccated parts and portioning them, the two steaks on either end would inevitably be a little more dried out. Not really an issue to cook the portions from the middle, but the end pieces, after being cooked to proper temp, would look to be undercooked and show more of a rare color. It didn't happen every single time, but it happened enough to pique my interest. I'm guessing it's an issue with the air interacting with the myoglobin on the end pieces, but I'm not sure. I know the steaks have been cooked to the appropriate temperature, but sometimes it's hard to explain that to a guest that it's actually okay. You suggested covering with fat during aging, but I don't have control over the meat during that process. Is there any way to try and control that a little better besides flashing the sliced meat in the oven to manipulate the color? Meat is not cooked to low temp or in a bag. Huh. That's a really interesting problem. So, you know, I've done like a lot of work with the color temperature of meat. The color of meat cooked to particular temperatures in bags and out bags, but I've never thought about the end-to-end variation based on dry aging. I don't know what it is. It could be the lower moisture content is doing something, or it could be something you're saying. Typically, exposure to more oxygen would make it look less rare. In other words, like even long-term exposure to oxygen would make it look less rare than it would otherwise, because you would either be exposure to more oxygen would cause it to be in an oxidized state, which would be redder, true, but would denature faster than if it was in a deoxygenated state, so it would look cooked faster. This has been my experience. But I don't know. It's an interesting problem. I would like to hear from anyone else out there whether they've noticed this, whether dry-aged meat tends to, and the more dry it is, whether it tends to take longer to lose its rare color. It's an interesting problem. I have to think about it. Might be a moisture issue. What do you think? You guys, not your forte, but you have any thoughts on this?
I'd like to talk about air quality.
You're a low quality individual, Peter. What I meant was, it's an unrelated thing. If you're talking about like sandwiches, like, is it a book about like meats? Is it a book about cheeses? Is it a book about vegetable toppings? Is it a book about the main problem of sandwiches, which is people making them too freaking dry or not getting the bread to product ratio correct? Or using a bread that's too crusty for the sandwich that they have involved, so that you sit there chewing on it and like can't even get the bolus of bread down? Is that what the book's about? No, it's about bread. Now, I'm sure they dealt with the best varieties of bread for a sandwich. Maybe they had a couple
which
sandwiches
would be a
in
section
there.
On
that sandwich. Would be a section on. It would not be a section on sandwich. It would be a section on sandwich bread. Do the people who make sandwich bread, do they make sandwiches? No.
I feel like the cooking issue site needs to have a little barometer of the Dave irritation level. And
Dave, Nick just texted and said that he's still waiting to hear Jen on the show. And we've all been waiting. And he said it's been 2 years in the making, so.
Well, invite her on. I mean, she's busy. She's working. You know what I mean? But, you know, she's doing architecture work. But, you know, yeah, we'll invite her on.
Maybe she can redesign the studio.
Yeah, with the big budget that
yeah,
that we have. Anyway, pizza. Free pizza. That's what we're paying for architecture in.
Yep.
Pizza. Aaron writes in on sterilizing. For the census, I'm 28, male, married, and I have an immersion circulator. I've listened to your show since before the long break in the podcast. When was that? We had like a couple weeks break.
That was in August, which is normal. Can you let everybody know that the Searsall is on back order?
We'll talk about that in a minute. Bring
hey,
it up
everybody,
after
everybody. The Searsall's on back order.
Oh, Jesus. It's not.
Fake news.
Fake news. Fake news. No one called anyone a moron. Fake news. Love the show. The question might fall into the category of cooking adjacent or perhaps just issues. My wife and I are expecting our first child around Thanksgiving. Hey, congratulations. Awesome. While doing research on bottle sterilizers, in big quotes, I found out that they are simply steamers with no pressurization. Coming from a lab, the term sterilization probably means something different than to home applications. No, it doesn't. If you're buying a sterilizer at home, a real one, right, like the one that if you, like, let's say you live out in the middle of nowhere and have to perform surgery on yourself or, like, dental equipment, those are real pressure sterilizers. And pressure canners are also can be rigged up as sterilizers. But there are people out there who at home take sterilization seriously and for real, and those people get real sterilizers. Anyone that calls a steamer a sterilizer is a low-quality individual. What they must mean is that steaming is enough to kill whatever is going to be on a bottle because it's not going to, it's not, they're not planning on having spore forming bacteria that can, you know, and you're not planning on keeping stuff in an anoxic environment. So you're, that's must mean what they mean. But that, yeah, no, normal people outside of a lab, when they say sterilize, should mean sterilize and not just pasteurize and or kill vegetative cells. And I hate it when people don't use those kinds of terms precisely because someday someone's going to get killed. Anyway, my question, if baby bottle sterilizer is simply a steaming compartment, what would keep me from spending this money on, say, a nice big all-clad pot with tiered steaming basket, which I could then use for one, steaming, making pasta, two, steamed buns, three, steamed veggies, and four, baby bottles? Am I a bad future father for wanting a nice new kitchen thing so close to the birth of my firstborn? No. No, I mean, look, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something, Aaron. Your life's about to change rather dramatically, so buy yourself something now. Like, buy yourself something now. As long as you're not going to bankrupt yourself, get a nice pot. Like, why would you want something that's just... Like, baby stuff is... You already have to buy a bunch of, like, you know, like, very specific baby stuff if you're going to be having a kid. Like, I'm sure... I don't know, but, like, if you're anything like, you know, we were, you're going to have to buy this expensive, you know, pump, breast pump. You have to buy all this stuff anyway, right? So why not get yourself something as long as you have the cat? What do you think, Stas?
Don't know. Don't care.
You don't care?
No.
Why do you not care?
Because I don't have kids.
Oh, so you can't... See, this is Nastasia. Well, no empathy for... Yeah. This is what... This is I have no empathy for people. That's
really
what she's saying.
No, I don't care about this subject, actually.
What the hell is wrong with you?
I don't know. I feel nothing for it.
Just,
wow.
I'm telling you the truth.
This is Nastasia. It's like... I hope they know that people, like, this is kind of what you had to do.
Ask somebody who's having a baby. Or...
Why does it have to do with just having a... You can't have any empathy for anyone going through a change in their life at all. Even just because you have to live with a bunch of people your age who are having babies and you are sick of hearing of their babies, you can't have empathy even like for someone that you don't have to sit and listen to their story because they're not actually in the room with you?
I could fake empathy right now. You want me to do that?
Oh, Jesus.
So you see how the overcooked and underseasoned came out? I mean, this is the vortex of evil right here.
Right.
I'm dealing with. So
right.
You can't help but get sucked into that. And I say, treat yourself.
Oh my God! Treat yourself. Is that a reference from Parks and Registration? Parks and yeah, good. Treat yourself. Peggy wrote in. Hey team, quick question: will it spin? Will the spins all turn yogurt into instant labne? Well, not instant. It takes about 15 minutes. But yes, you can do it. It's one of my favorite applications for the spins all. You just got to be careful when you load it in. If it wobble, it's going to wobble as it starts up. If it wobbles too much, it'll go into flashing mode. You might need to start it a couple of times. But yeah, it's one of my favorite applications.
Wait, Searsall.
Oh,
yeah, Wong is on the chat room and he wants to know if the Searsall is on back order. Oh,
Nick. All right, Peter, what were you going to ask?
No, I actually want to hear about the Searsall being on back order.
It's not on freaking back order.
I think I'd like to know the story too.
Wait, back order?
Okay, so it's people, Searsall? Once and for all, I'm going to say this one more freaking time. Here's how this works. Booker and Dax Equipment Corporation came up with, produced the Spinzall. Sorry, Searsall. Torch attachment. Turns your torch into a handheld broiler. Awesome for parties. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. Booker and Dax owned them and sold them on Amazon for a couple of years. Amazon.com approached us and said, hey, Booker and Dax, we are trying to get into the low-temperature sous vide cooking space, and we're going to push your product, and so we want to buy them in bulk, and we will just pay you for the whole load net 90 days. And you will make less money, but we're going to sell a lot more of them. They lied because they don't really care about it. And by the way, they're, Amazon's amazing to deal with as a customer, but as a vendor, they're like a nightmare, complete nightmare to deal with. Such that like if someone calls you from Amazon and says, we want to sell your product, just be aware that the minute that person hangs up the phone, they have quit and another three people have entered their job, right? And then when you call a person again and try to get another person on the phone, as soon as you have hung up the phone, that person has quit and there will be another person who picks up the phone.
Somebody told me from Amazon this one thing, and I called back to say, this guy told me this one thing, and they said, he has been erased.
Yeah, and we're not by the way, people, I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. We're not calling the call center. We're talking about Amazon corporate
is calling us.
Not Amazon's like call center where it's like, you know, a thousand levels of separation between them and Bezos. There should be like a levels of separation between the person you're speaking to and Bezos.
Yeah, they should say that immediately. I am 50
by Bezos number.
Yeah,
my Bezos number is 85.
Yeah,
I have 85 reports between Bezos and myself. And by the way, 30 of those reports are a computer program.
Right.
So, like, so here's...
But let's make it clear. Amazon owns these Searsols. We cannot go into an Amazon thing and take them out.
No, Amazon physically owns them. So Nastassi and I made the horrible mistake, which we will never make again, of not owning any of them ourselves. Every single existing Searsol that is not personally owned by a person right now is owned by Amazon.com. Amazon has in their warehouse 2,500 of them. Okay? They have another 4,000 in their possession on a boat that they own that is traveling on the ocean from China.
Right now.
Right now. Okay. They own 4,000. They've already been handed to them. They are on their boat. They own 2,500 that are in their warehouse. Yet their computer thinks that if they start selling them, they will eventually run out. And so they do not want to sell them. And it's been this way for several months.
Too long, didn't read Searsols on back order.
Peter Kim. Peter Kim. Now, what were you going to ask me before?
No. I was just going to ask for your definition of instantaneous then.
Instantaneous in
what you were saying,
not the answer to that question.
Yeah, instant.
Labna,
15 seconds. Is
15 minutes.
15 minutes, right.
So, not instantaneous.
Well, yeah, so what's your window on instant?
I mean, are we talking in cooking? Instant means like 30 seconds. That's instant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like by the time it takes you to perform an operation and you can't perform another operation because this one happens so fast, that's instant. Anything that's longer than that is not instant. In geologic time, it's instant. You know what I mean? But in cooking time, 15 minutes is not instant.
Right.
It's fast. You know what I mean? Faster than going to the store, especially because your store probably doesn't have that product. But anyway. Do you disagree?
No, that's fair.
Right. Nastassia doesn't care because it has to do with other people's
problems.
That's not
true. Oh, yeah. I care about this one.
Well, yeah.
Elizabeth Wells writes in. I hope this is the correct email. It is. How much fat is absorbed by food of various / any type, but specifically regarding meat, when cooking sous vide? I'm sure temperature plays a part, but are there any generalities one can make? I'm a personal chef and occasionally have clients who are overly concerned about such nutritional issues. Well, the good news is meats absorb on a scale of like, they absorb practically nothing. They absorb practically no fat at all. And in fact, if you dry it off, like almost nothing. They have very few crevices. Now, things that are battered, things that are breaded, things that are porous, like veggies, these things absorb oil like the end of the world is coming. But, which it might be. But the, meats have very, very little fat absorption. They're very little is actually sticking to it. And a lot of it has to do with whether you towel it off. And you're more likely to add more when you're doing a sear off than is happening with it. So it's not affecting the nutritional value of it that way, I would say, at all.
Peter, do you have an end of the world plan? No.
My end of the world plan? I can't talk about my end of the world plan.
Why not? You don't want other people to gank
it? No, it's scary.
What is it?
Why? What is it?
No, I'm not going to tell you about it.
You're just going to drink yourself to...
What? What is it?
No.
There's two people. There's the ones that are proactive, like you and I, and then there's the ones that drink themselves to death.
Yeah.
Which are you?
Look.
Well, how's the end coming?
What's that?
No, well, there's two scenarios, right? There's The problem with the nuclear scenario is that it's a 15-minute problem max.
Right, you got no time.
Right? So the only answer is to hope that they miss by a little bit and to get into a subway station if you live in New York City, right? I mean, you know, you don't have time to get out. Nothing. You know what I mean? But if it's not nuclear,
I
think the real thing is reading the warning signs and just, you know, getting the heck out of a concentrated area. You know what I mean?
Before mass panic ensues.
I should not talk about this. This is like a bad... When I was a kid, I assumed... In fact, I didn't want to live in New York City when I was a kid because I assumed we would die in a nuclear holocaust. This was during, Cold War times. Yeah. That was my assumption, my base assumption. I would sit as a kid with a compass because I was one of those kids that liked using compasses, and I would draw radius maps around, like, lower Manhattan and figure out where, like, my house was in New Jersey, then look up the blast radius of various size hydrogen bombs and be like, oh, you know, I'm dead. And then my dad was like, don't worry, they have these things called MIRVs. And so what happens is they actually just send a ring of hydrogen bombs around your whole city. So actually the blast radius is much larger than you're calculating. It's like, thanks, Dad. Thanks for that.
One of the things you told me is it's going to happen on a clear day without a cloud in the sky. Because that's the whole thing. And there was that cloud in the thing, but then they bomb Nakazawa.
Oh, in the real life. Mm-hmm. So in the real life, when, you know, the United States was the, you know, dropped nuclear weapons on Nagasaki, the original target was another town, Niigata, and they flew over it, and they had very strict orders to, they wanted a visual read on it, and they wanted to be able to, like, you know, photograph everything, and they wanted a visual run on the bomb site. So there was a cloud, literally a cloud, over the actual target site, and they did a couple passes over the town, and the cloud cover didn't clear over that one site. And so because of that, it was not the city that got bombed. Nagasaki was the city that got bombed.
Crazy, huh? Now you're forever going to think about that.
Butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Wait, so Peter, what are you going to do?
What? Nick Wong says he's going to pull a Delp.
Oh, too long, Nick. You got to light a hibachi.
That's true.
No, he says Peter's going to pull a Delp.
Oh. Peter would be sitting there lighting a hibachi and trying to jam the stuff when the thing hits. It's too late. Besides, if you're going to go in a big ball of fire, like, might as well not do smoke inhalation.
Might as well taste delicious.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm a try to survive at all costs kind of thing.
Well, of course. I mean, I thought you meant you know the world is going to end.
But there's a chance they could miss. There's lots of things that could happen.
Then survive, of course, at all costs.
Well, most of Nastasia's friends are go to the roof of the building with a drink.
Just film.
On that note, should we take a quick break?
Let's take a break. We'll come back with fewer nuclear war
issues.
Apocalypse
issues.
Bob's Red Mill has been milling whole grains since 1978. When you mill whole grains, you get all three parts, the bran, the germ, and the endosperm. The bran, or the roughage, makes up about 14% of the whole grain. It's the outer skin of the edible kernel. It contains large amounts of B vitamins, some protein, trace minerals, phytochemicals, but most importantly, dietary fiber. The germ is only about 2.5% of the kernel. It's actually the sprouting section of the seed, what's going to grow into a plant. It's usually separated during milling process because it contains most of the fat and therefore has a shorter shelf life. The endosperm is the main energy storage unit of the seed. That's where the growing plant gets its energy before it can start photosynthesizing and making its own. It makes up a huge portion of the grain, about 83%, and it's the main source that's used for white flour. When you make white flour, you get rid of the germ and the bran and just have the white endosperm left. It contains almost all the carbohydrates. It also contains protein and iron and some of the other B vitamins as well. It's kind of what you classically think of when you're thinking of flour. So all that's there when you're milling with whole grains, but when you mill with whole grains, you also get the bran, which is the kind of roughage and gives that's what gives that kind of color to it. Also gives you extra fiber that helps you to be regular, and you also get the germ, which adds the fat and the flavor, which we all like from whole grains. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast. So Nathan Myhrvold had some interesting things to say about bran. He was saying that, like, it actually is, like, better at reducing the volume of bread than anything else. And he
including broken glass.
Broken glass, well, and fiberglass, yeah. And, like, ball bearings they tested when they were doing it. So yeah. I can't wait to read the book. It should be interesting.
He also put the smackdown on any claimed nutritional benefits from whole grains.
Oh, shocking. Wait. Nathan Myhrvold was against a false nutritional claim? Shocking. Shocking. they're you know, a lot, you know, that whole crew is like that. Yeah. Anyway. Wait, so what were we talking about? Oh, we have a caller, right?
End of the world. Oh, yeah, there's a caller.
All right, caller. Yeah, hopefully this is not an end of the world question, but if it is, we'll take it.
Well, let's just keep hoping that people avoid the big red button. You were just talking about Myhrvold's new book. I actually have a bread question.
Ooh, all right.
I have finally arrived at a sourdough bread recipe that my wife actually likes, but I'm trying to get a little more lift in it.
So what did she not like about other sourdoughs, and what does she like about this one?
What I did with this one, I actually just used the pizza dough. I've been messing with another recipe for forever, and she just never liked it. I mean, I tried more of this, less of that, every iteration of it you could think of. And it never worked. But so she's liked my sourdough pizza dough recipe for a very long time. So I just put that in a bread pan, let it rise, and baked it. And it actually came out really good.
Okay, but you just want more lift out of it?
I just want more lift.
How sour is it?
It is sort of medium sour. The recipe calls for an enormous amount of actual sourdough.
Right.
And if your sourdough is perking well, it will raise it then in a matter of like 3 or 4 hours.
Right. I mean, the issue, obviously, so if it's pizza dough, it's probably a fairly high hydration, right? And the other issue with it is that if it's more sour it is, the kind of more slack it's going to be, because the acidity is going to weaken the gluten structure, right? So I'm guessing it's some combination of those things. I don't know how strong a flour you're using, but I would maybe move to a stronger flour. But if you like the flavor, you like the flavor. So the acidity level is what it is. I would move to a stronger flour and or maybe dope it with gluten. See whether that is helpful to get more rise out of it. Mess with the hydration a little bit. It's been a long time since I've noodled with those things myself with my own hands. It's, you know, for the past, I haven't been baking seriously in probably 10, you know, 12 years, probably since when Dax was born. Pizzas, yes, but like, I mean, pizza is serious business. I don't want anyone to get mad at me about it. But in terms of like, you know, Steingarten used to say the crust is the most important part of a pizza. Everything else is just garbage. But he said that. I mean, I don't think he's necessarily 100% right. But it's structurally easier to get a pizza, obviously, because you don't need the rise and lift and all that stuff. I don't know. Does anyone in chat room have any advice on this, Dave?
I'll check and get back to you.
We'll check. But I would try those things. In general, I think, getting a nice high lift out of a sourdough can be somewhat challenging the more sour it is, just because of the acidity's effect on the gluten.
Epoxy method is being suggested.
Wait. Hey, Siri. Oh, my God.
I know. I was wondering.
My phone thought I was asking it a question, and so
about the end of the world?
No, about gluten. Siri was looking something up on the web about nothing. She, as usual, she found nothing of interest.
At my brother's wedding, my mom was going off in the car and was like, I can't take your father. I can't take that. Can't do it. And I guess Siri was listening, and she said, when you can't, you can't.
Really?
Oh, my mom was like, what?
Yeah. Really? Uh-huh. Did your mom erase Siri off the phone?
Oh, no. Isn't that weird, though?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, yeah, Nastasia was in Portland for a wedding. How'd it go?
Joey's wedding. Good.
That's her brother.
Yep.
How was the food?
Good. What was the food? It was pasta and short ribs and mashed potatoes.
Double starch. Pasta and mashed potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You made fun of me endlessly for a double
but
protein.
That's normal with my brother because he doesn't eat stuff. Doesn't like condiments. Doesn't like lots of stuff.
That was big in Cameroon. You get dishes where it's spaghetti, rice, and then tubers.
Wow.
A little sauce. A little
starch on starch on starch.
Yeah, that's right.
But with Nastassi, what did you get mad at me for? Protein on protein?
He served his son a chicken breast and a hard-boiled egg for dinner.
What's wrong with that?
So that's the chicken and the chicken. It's chicken, two forms of chicken.
What's wrong with that?
That's weird.
And it's one of those things.
What about chicken salad? Chicken that salad weird? Is mayo and chicken. It's chicken bound with itself.
By the way, Peter loves a gas station egg salad sandwich.
Oh, I do.
So back to the sourdough for a second.
How is
so
mayo? Because there's
egg. So do you think any of these things are going to help you?
The gluten thing is really easy to try. I keep gluten around because I put it in my noodles. I have a Phillips noodle machine that just makes really, really good ramen noodles.
Huh.
It can be a little difficult with, like, softer noodles, but with a really high protein mix in it, it just makes beautiful stuff.
Yeah, I would try for the higher – I mean, like, I've never done I've never tried to get around the fact that sourdough has reduces the the strength of the gluten by adding more. But I mean, it's like something I would try. The other thing, obviously, is doing less pitch. So pitching less of the sourdough into it, and obviously you'll have a less sour tasting bread. But the structure of the bread's gonna the less sourdough starter you use. And the fresher the sourdough is, right? So in other words, like if you had an old sourdough that had a lot of acidity versus refreshing it and building it over the course of a couple of days by a couple of additions and doublings before you did it in will kind of lower the acidity, increase the activity of it, and then you'll have to pitch less. You'll have a longer rise time, but it'll be a slower, a less acidic product, and that'll have better structure because the more sourdough you have in there with the old product in it, the kind of more it's not just the gluten's going to be, weaker, but like everything's been kind of eaten down a little bit. And so I would bet the less of the starter you add, the kind of better your overall end structure will be. But if your wife doesn't like the taste of it that way, then she doesn't like the taste of it that way. You know what I'm saying?
The times this has succeeded, it was with very, very fresh starter that I'd been feeding twice a day religiously for a week.
Yeah, right, because it's, it doesn't, because it's new product, so your bugs are going great, but you haven't broken down the substrate that much, right? I mean, that's like so that's like a key, but that's kind of a pain unless you're baking every day. It's kind of a pain in the butt, you know what I mean?
Well, it is, and I mean, I'll keep it going for 2 weeks, and then I'll lose it, and then it takes 5 days to really reboot right, and that's just sort of a little cycle in my existence.
Right, I know, and I think that's why most people tend to use instead of like actual sourdough. I think most people who can't do it every day tend to do more the very small amount of yeast, very long rise time, kind of an approach instead, just because it's easier to predict a day before you're going to bake than it is to predict a week before you're going to bake. You know what I mean?
Well, and I've experimented with that endlessly. And she likes pizza when I do it that way. She does not like bread when I do it that way.
Anyway, we should all read. We'll all read the Modernist Bread Book, and we'll revisit it I finally get a hold of a copy.
That's on my Christmas wish list, I can assure you. Otherwise, anybody will buy it for me, not maybe another question.
Well, I don't know what Amazon's going to sell for. $560. What do you think they're going to sell for? Like $400 and something? $300 and change. Wiley's book is $75. I think it's going to be at Amazon at like $50. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows what Amazon is?
I'm afraid to ask.
Yeah.
Two quick comments on some things that have been on the show recently.
Mm-hmm.
You had a guy talk about making stock in an American pressure canner.
Right.
I do that semi-regularly. And by far the best way I have found to make chicken stock in it, especially from a yield perspective, is to put nothing in it but chicken feet and water.
Oh, you like the chicken feet? It's like a hyper gelatinous.
And then pressure cook it to death. I mean, like for at least like an hour and a half. I usually go 2+. You don't have to brown anything. You don't have to mess with anything. It's just put it in and cook it.
I will try that.
Yeah.
And the great thing about it is that I get a higher yield than anything else I've tried that produces a stock that good.
What do the chicken feet look like when they're done? Can you even dry them and fry them, or are they so gone that you can't even dry them and fry them?
I have not tried, but I mean, you know, 2 hours at 15 psi, they're pretty far gone.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a fan of the pressure cooked, dried, and fried.
But
chicken
the
feet.
The feet don't tend to reabsorb a lot of the moisture when I make. When I make it with random bits I've accumulated in the freezer, or with whole chickens, which I do sometimes when I'm in a, when I just like need a batch, it seems like I don't get enough volume of stock back out of the total mix. Like too much of it stays in the meat.
Man,
the chicken feet, that problem just disappears.
I will try it. I like chicken feet. You know who loves chicken feet? Booker.
Nice.
He's back on eating chicken.
It's the original chicken finger.
Do you like chicken feet, Peter?
Yeah, I like chicken feet.
You know what? You ever had the pressure cooked ones?
Don't know.
I mean, the advantage of the pressure cooked ones, you just eat it. You don't have. You're not stripping it off or like gumming the stuff off.
Yeah.
You're just eating the whole damn thing.
Okay, I haven't then.
The problem with it is that pressure cooked bones, even when they're edible, my issue with them is they still have that little bit of a kind of a calcium-y thing. Do you like that?
Yeah, I like bones.
Really?
A lot, yeah.
Booker likes bones, too. All right, Jose, I got another question from...
All right, can I just make an announcement?
Oh, my God.
Like I've said many times before, one question when you call in. One question.
This is the hammer.
Or we hang up on you.
The hammer falls.
Because people get bored. This isn't a phone call, a personal phone call with Dave. This is a show.
Oh, my God. Nastasia is just, like, in a mean mood
all day. I'm just saying. Do you want multiple questions? I'm sorry. Do you want multiple questions?
Anastasia is like jumping on me. Dave,
do you want?
Dave,
I'm asking.
Let me finish this question. Multiple question, lady. I recently made Kenji's. That would be Kenji Lopez Alt's Ribolita 3 times for clients of mine. The first and third time I didn't use Parmesan rind, but the second time I did. What are your thoughts on Parmesan rind, Peter? Parmesan rind,
yeah.
Parmigiano Reggiano rind of cheese.
In my mind, that's probably not the best part of the cheese to be using.
Well, that's what they use it for soups typically.
Yeah, but you know, it's kind of like that oxidated flavor too.
Does Cesare do that shit?
I don't know.
Stuff?
Don't know.
No. Anyway, the first and third times I did not use the rind. The second time I did. That time, the finished soup smelled overwhelmingly of vomit, like straight up cheese vomit. I stored it in core containers and left it for the client anyway, crossing my fingers. I returned to that client's house two weeks later, to find a container of the soup still in the fridge and the vomit smell was gone, and there were no client complaints, so I think I'm good. The ingredients were practically identical all 3 times I made it, other than the rind. The Parmigiano rind, sold in a package of many rinds together, didn't have any off smells. I've used other rinds in the package and other preparations with no vomit smell or anything odd. What gives? Thanks so much, Elizabeth Wells. You know what? A lot of things that are breakdown products can go vomity, especially, I think, if there's kind of acidity in it, so it gets that kind of vomity note. I think a lot of, I don't know if you had acid in the Ribolita or if this one was particularly a little more acidic, but like cheese, especially very high breakdown cheeses, which Parmigiano is because it's aged for a long time, has a lot of protein breakdown in it. Fat breakdown, all of that like can give you some vomity smells. Do you have the, Nastasia, what are your thoughts on cheese vomit? Do you have the, she has a smile on her face thinking about cheese vomit. She's got that murdering everyone smile. Nastasia has a smile on her face. That if you see the smile on her face, it means she's contemplating everyone's death.
Thinking maybe so. Dave wants multiple questions on the calls.
No, you weren't, you know, you were thinking, I'm going to murder all these people. Nastasia's got that. Whatever.
But butyric acid. That's the cheesy vomit. Vomity chemical.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Known in the flavor industry as having both the cheesy and vomity note.
Wait, what is this? What are you grumbling over, Nastasia?
Nothing.
Wow. Yeah. Stas's rules. Number one, I don't care. Number two, I do care. Only one question.
Yeah. Okay, so Tom, and I'm going to pronounce it exactly as though... Oh, there's another Tom who wrote in a charcuterie question, but we'll get that when we're adding
and
all
old
the...
old questions.
This is what this is, Nastasia, if you like, let me get to it. But Tom also wrote in a charcuterie question, but I'm saving that. Johnny Hunter wrote in and said he'd be willing to do a charcuterie show. We should get, you know, him and maybe someone. But should we wait for him to be in New York City or should we do it over the phone?
It's better when they're here.
All right, so we'll wait for him to be in New York City. So next time Johnny's in the city, we'll do something. So Tom, and this is how you pronounce his name, Melioranza, See, it says he. I like it when people give me the pronunciation, but he said you have to say it fast. Melioranza. Hope this is the right email address. It is. One of the best things I've ever done with a bird in the kitchen is Ken Hom's Chinese-American turkey with rice and sausage stuffing. Even though the meat came out a little dry, the rice stuffing is freaking awesome. I'd like to make a chicken version of this dish, and I want to optimize it. Whenever I see optimize now, because we've been talking about vomit, I see vomitize instead of optimize, but they're different words.
Nice.
Optimize, vomitize. Optimize. Ideally, I want nice rendered skin, moist meat, and tons of that delicious stuffing cooked to a safe temp, but I'm not sure how to make it happen. I'm thinking of boning, or is it deboning the bird before stuffing it would look cool and allow for more stuffing. Avoiding Hom's tricky step of stuffing the rice under the skin. I have a circulator, and I'd be open to ordering some meat glue if you think that might be helpful. Anyway, what would you do if you were me? You ever do rice stuffings, Peter?
Oh, just because I'm Korean-American?
Yeah,
then?
Come of course.
On. No.
No.
Have you ever done, like,
why did you ask me?
I used to make, because you don't like cooking this kind of stuff. You don't cook whole birds.
Yeah, I do. I cook whole chickens.
We do?
I do.
Really? You ever do, like, a rice stuffing?
No.
You ever make dolmas?
Nope.
So I think, you ever make dolmas, Peter?
No, they're made dolmas.
Dolmas are delicious.
Although I do wonder what other uses of grape leaves are.
Grape leaves, you know, like Greek grape leaves.
That's the only thing I know in the world that uses grape leaves.
And you can do like the rice and meat. Is that the same thing?
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is that if you're looking at the recipe, the way it's done is that the duck is steamed with the rice in it. And the rice is like soaks up some a flavoring from the mixture, but also it's steamed as though rice is. And so like you can steam regular rice, you can steam sticky rice, although sticky rice always is steamed this way. And if you do, if you're going to do a chicken, you don't want it to get as cooked, right, on the steam aspect. I think you could probably, if you were going to like keep it open or bone, steam it from underneath and get it to steam. But I would cook the rice almost through and stuff it hot. I think that's the kind of key, is almost cooking the rice through with the flavors and then put it in and then letting it gather the last of its juices from the chicken on the inside. And I think that would be kind of the major win. So the reason I brought this before is if you're making dolmas, like you can par cook or you can like pre-fry the rice and then get some absorption in and stuff it in kind of par cooked. And I think that might be the way to do it. It's going to take a little fiddling around to figure out exactly how much so that it's not like totally overcooked, but that's kind of a good way to go.
Yeah, I got
to
wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
Yep.
All right. Well, we got questions on the spins all. We'll get to later, I guess, in...
That's not on back order, right?
No.
It's not. Well, it's right now it's available only on Modernist Pantry. Do they have their units in? Their units are in the country. Are they shipping?
No, I don't think so.
Live yet?
No.
They'll be shipping live within probably a week or so. The units are in the country, and then we're getting the next big order in sometime at the end of October. But yeah, keep on spinning. Cooking issues.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.